When we find Israel in this story, the Lord God Almighty had freed them from slavery in Egypt with a mighty hand. God had led the host of the people down to the banks of the Red Sea, and there caused a great wind to blow, and the wind piled up the waters and formed a great deep dry valley, and the people walked through the sea, through the heart of the waters, safely out of Egypt, safely as a nation. They walked into the middle of nowhere. They walked into a desert. Every single night there in the desert, the God who had freed them from Egypt appeared as a pillar of fire stretching from earth all the way up into heaven, and they were supposed to follow the pillar of fire so that they would be going in the right way after God. But the pillar of fire only ever led them deeper and deeper and deeper into the desert. They had been promised freedom. And what they got was being stuck out in the middle of the desert with no provisions, no water, no food. Now, this wasn't their fault. This wasn't because of a lack of preparedness on the part of the Israelites. God had told them, you don't even have time to let your bread rise. You have to just run. So there they were. They weren't survivalists. All they had ever known to do was make bricks. They weren't farmers, and even if they were farmers, that wouldn't matter because God didn't let them stay in one place long enough to grow any food. Every single night, the pillar of flame would move, and they would have to follow. They were out of food, out of water, out of ideas. And who could have the strength of faith necessary to say to their child asking for water, there is no water. There is only but to suffer. The people cried out against God. They complained bitterly. Why did you bring us out of Egypt? To kill us and our children in this thirsty desert? In other words, God, are you trying to kill us, or have you just not thought this through? It's pretty brassy, it seems like. Pretty rude, almost, for the people of Israel to challenge God in this way. But the people of Israel, they have good reason to be rather forward in their petitions with God. Not only is their need acute, but they are only facing that need because they have followed where God told them to go. They needed water because they followed God out into a desert. And so they cried out, God, we cannot do this without you. You had better get down here unless you want all of us to die. They cried out to God for water, and God provided them with water. Torrents of water gushing from a dry and dusty rock, a river in the wilderness. And so the people were able to continue on when they could not have done so. The people were able to do something that was beyond their power to accomplish on their own. They did what was impossible because God's efforts began at the very limits of the people's power. Now, it wasn't just the water incident either out there in the wilderness. Over and over again, when the people of Israel needed something, they would cry out to God for what they needed. And each time, God would provide them with what they lacked. The people cried out for food to nourish them, and so God made bread simply appear among them. Manna raining from heaven, enough bread every day for the whole nation to satisfy their hunger. And on another occasion, the people were attacked by an army out in the desert, and God gave them inexplicable victory over an army, even though Israel had no army, no soldiers, no weapons. After way too many months of eating nothing but manna bread every single day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the people cried out for something else to eat, anything else to eat, some meat or something. And God made quails simply rain down so that the people could have their fill of meat. This went on and on and on and on for 40 years. For 40 years, the people were wandering out in the wilderness, following where God was leading them and running up against their own limitations over and over again, running up against what they could not do for themselves and needing to turn to God for help. Why the need to wander for so long? I think that it is because the people of Israel were being taught how to live life in a new way. All they had known was a life of the merest survival, with no hope or purpose, no destiny to fulfill, no great work of their own to do, nothing but to survive to see another day, with no reason for being. God is teaching the people of Israel who they are. God is teaching them that they can do great and unimaginable things, but they can only do great and unimaginable things if they learn to rely upon God. To follow God, for them, meant doing something that was actually impossible. A whole nation of people surviving with no supplies in the desert, it's impossible. Following God meant learning to order the life of the people. To order it, not based around what they could do on their own, but to order the life of the people around what they could do only with the help of God. What they could do only with the help of God became the center of their life together. Every person has a calling. It is the reason why God created you and put you on this earth, living on this day. Fred Buechner calls that idea of calling the intersection between your deep gladness and the world's deep need. Your calling is where your deep gladness intersects with the world's deep need. The story of the people of Israel wandering in the desert teaches us about what it looks like to be doing that work, to be doing the work that God created you to do. It is going to look like setting out to do something that you know is beyond your ability to accomplish. Following your calling looks like trying to do the actually impossible. And to do that begins by crying out to God. Following your calling begins by saying, God, this is more than I can do. I cannot do this work. You had better get down here if you want it to get done. It seems counterintuitive that the work that we ought to do is precisely that work which we cannot do. But there is a deep logic to the idea in God's economy. Now, if I have set as the course of my life the doing of work that is entirely within my power to accomplish, then I have not set my sights very high. Not by Christian standards, anyway. Because if the work I devote my life to doing could be done perfectly well without any assistance from God, then I have ordered my life in such a way that it doesn't matter whether God exists. The existence of God is immaterial to the achievement or failure of what I have set the very purpose of my life toward achieving. You see, faith is not a set of intellectual commitments or a pile of creeds with a sign on the dotted line at the bottom. Faith is a way of life. It's a way of ordering your life such that it matters very much whether God exists. Faith is a way of life in which I need for God to exist in order to accomplish what I have devoted my life to doing. Living the life of faith, following God's calling on your life, these things can't be separated from one another. Now, to have needs that you cannot satisfy on your own, that is no shame. To face challenges that you do not know how to face, that is no failure. To come to the end of your endurance and find that your labors have only begun, that is no disgrace. All of that and much more is necessary as a part of the life of faith. It is part and parcel of the human condition of following after God in trying to be Christians. Remember, the people of Israel knew for a fact that they were following where God was leading them. A giant pillar of flame in the sky told them that they were going where God was calling them, and they faced challenges that they could not overcome on their own. There was no water. They were in the desert. They needed God's help, or they could not continue. At the very limits of what we can accomplish on our own, at the very line between what is possible and what we deem impossible, that is where the shared work of God and humanity can begin. Following your calling is to keep on working when it becomes crystal clear to you that you need the help of God to continue. Now, I cannot tell you what your calling is. Your calling is your own. God writes it on your spirit, not mine. Your calling is your own. I can't tell you what it is, but I can tell you that you will need God to do it. Now, to need God may be to be a teacher and to see another set of strange bruises on the child who comes to class angry every day. To need God may be to understand with perfect clarity that you need to leave the only profession you've ever known. To need God may be to look at the face of your first child and to understand that you haven't the faintest clue how to help this person thrive. To need God may be to stand before a judge and to say that you know that you broke the law and that nothing will stop you from breaking the law again because the law is evil. To need God, it may be to go on living just one more day that will be just like every other day you can remember. When? Not if. When life places the impossible in your path, and looking at it, you can feel something inside of yourself break. When that happens, turn to God and cry out, "Is this why you made me? Is this why you knit me together in my mother's womb to kill me out in this wilderness I can't see the end of?" To cry out and demand an answer from God, that is to meet God in the wilderness and to begin to partner with her. Faith is a journey through the wilderness in which we live our lives truly, deeply, courageously, not knowing where we shall find the strength to do so. The life of faith is a journey that you could not imagine yourself taking before you find that your feet are already walking on the path. It is a journey that you would never have thought to set out on your own, because you never could have imagined that God would entrust something so important to you.